Hello, everyone. This is Tara Campbell-Lussier with Arrow Birth and the Arrow's Angle podcast. I want to welcome everyone here today. And we have a very special guest with us today. We have Dr. Steve Silvestro, who is a pediatrician and a dear friend of mine that I'm so happy to have on the podcast today. So hi, Steve, and welcome.
Hey, Tara. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Yes, I'm so happy. It takes a while with two busy entrepreneurs to schedule everything, but we're finally here. Yay!
I think we've talked about this for at least 6 months, if not longer.
If not longer, yeah. And just, it's been so great to just follow you along your path. And I know you've been following us as well and just kind of cheering each other on and all that good stuff. And, but yes, I'm so happy that we're here. And it's so great to talk to you. So I have to kind of gush about you and how we know each other for a second for people that are listening. So I was a very young doula when I met Steve and his wonderful wife, Monica. And, they were pregnant, about to be new parents. And so their daughter, Addie, so correct me here, is she turning, it's 2019, so she's turning 12?
She'll be 12 right? This November, that's right.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
I still remember coming to your guys' house and we just talked forever and ever. And I think a little bit of it was about birth and parenting stuff and a lot of it was just life. And
Harry
just,
Potter.
Harry Potter, and I remember you two, like you sharing how much you loved you two.
Yep.
And we just really connected. And so you guys were my first doula clients outside of just shadowing other doulas. So really one of my very first births that I ever went to. And it was just so special. And it still remains such a special memory for me. And I just remember laboring with you guys that day. And it was just, it was magic. It was so great.
It really was.
So great.
Monica actually just the other day reminded me that it was her mom who found you.
Really?
Yeah, I think Monica must have told her mom that we were thinking about having a doula, and yeah, I suppose she just wanted to try and help in whatever way she could. Maybe she didn't even know what it was. I just know that she found somewhere online a post somewhere that said, hey, I just finished up my training and am looking for someone who'd be willing to take on a brand new doula. And we said, sign us up.
And Monica and I also had that connection of like the Institute of Integrative Nutrition.
Yes.
You know, and so she had been, and I was either going or I think at that point I was probably going soon and she had just finished up. So we talked a lot about that. And
that's right.
That actually might have been how her mom found me.
It could be.
One of those, you know, boards or something for that school, which was amazing and life-changing and wonderful.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. And then, of course, you have another child. You have Cole, and he was, 2 years later?
Yep, just a little more than 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. And so for me, and I think I've told you before, that was the first birth that I went to after I gave birth to my twins. So I think Cole was winter time, right? Like
yeah.
January, February?
March, yep.
March.
Yep.
Okay. And then my twins were born in late August. And I was just so happy that my first birth back was with you guys. And of course I was stressed as a mom, like, you know, pumping logistics and all that stuff. And it just worked out so well. And it was overnight. And it just was another gorgeous, wonderful experience with you guys, at least from my perspective. So.
And that part, actually, I remember feeling very guilty of it being.
Really?
Well, it was in the middle of the night and we knew you had just had these babies. And like, oh my gosh, you know, should we just do this and not call Tara? When should we call?
Yeah.
And you know, but we were so glad that you were there both times. And yeah, that we get to have these memories with you.
I know, such sacred memories. It was so great. It really was so great. And really on my end, it couldn't have worked out any better with Cole's birth. Cause I remember it was the middle of the night and I went and the babies were asleep and it just, I think I came home very early in the morning. I wasn't gone very long and it just all worked out.
Yeah.
It did. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about those births, if you don't mind? I'd love to hear what it was like for you from a new father's perspective. And then you also have this unique perspective of being a medical doctor, specifically a pediatrician. So I'm curious if you were able to, you know, internally, I know that you were very present as a father and as a partner throughout those processes and those births, but were you able to kind of step out of that medical role and really like play that partner and dad role internally, or were you kind of struggling? Like, kind of walk us through what that like was like for you, if you don't mind.
Sure. So Monica got pregnant with Addie when I was still about halfway through my residency, my pediatric residency. So on the one hand, there was, you know, this feeling of, it was super exciting, obviously. It was our first baby. I was gone a lot. You know, you're working, I don't remember what it was at the time, 60 or 80 hour, I think it was 80 hour weeks is what we were allowed to do, up to 30 hours straight in the hospital. And so, you know, there's even now, looking back, a little bit of guilt that I wasn't able to be as fully physically present as maybe some dads get to be. But, you know, what I remember, the sort of pediatric part merging with the new parent part, was very early on, the 20-week ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And there was a little blip, a little bright spot on her heart, which, you know, I mean, to be totally honest to anyone who's listening, doctors, you get these years of training, and yet most of what you really know and put into practice comes to you after you're out and once you're actually taking care of people. Mm-hmm. So I had never learned about what a bright spot on the heart would be in med school or my time in residency. And so I was flipping out. In fact, most people love going to that first ultrasound because you get to see the baby. And I was dreading it because I was petrified that they'd find something wrong. And then of course this little bright spot comes up. And so then the doctor part kicks in. I'm doing all sorts of research and luckily know where to look for answers that are more helpful as opposed to just more fear inducing. And learned that it's a super common finding, especially nowadays because ultrasounds are so good and
even
usually
better
gets better.
Now, yeah.
So of course everything turned out fine. It was gone on subsequent ultrasounds. But I remember that was for the first kind of blend of having some medical knowledge, not enough to really fully know what was going on until I did more learning about it, blended up with just the normal anxious new dad part.
Right. It's like those two roles that are so huge and, you know, define who you are essentially. Right. And they're like combining. And I bet that was just such an interesting time for you guys. And I'm sure you shared a lot of that with Monica as well, of course, you know, and like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny though, about that point, because I was a year and a half out of med school and I think that she was still getting used to the idea that I was a doctor. We like to tell the story that shortly after I graduated, she got a bee sting that became infected and had a red streak down her finger towards her hand. And I said, "You need to get some antibiotics. Let me write you for some." And she said, "Shouldn't I go see a doctor?" And I was like, "Wait a minute. I am a doctor.
Yeah. I love that.
But then with the birth itself, you know, what I recall was that Addie came a few days late. And we were doing all the things in the book to try and spur delivery on. And then you came and we'd walked a lot in the neighborhood. And I think for me that the doctor piece really stepped out for most of the actual birth. Because, you know, here was my wife, this woman I had spent years with and loved with every fiber of my being. And she had back labor. You know, she ended up delivering on all fours with a crowd. I remember of nurses.
Oh my gosh, remember
and med
the crowd?
Students, everybody who were like, "Oh my God, who is this woman delivering with no pain meds on all fours?"
Right.
And I just remember
there was really a lot of people in the room at delivery.
Yeah, I kind
really
of
was.
I didn't really notice who anybody was, even though it was at the hospital where I worked, so I knew some people. But I just remember the sense that there was a crowd.
Yeah. I think honestly also, I mean, she was doing a natural birth and that's become more and more common, I would say. But this was, again, 12 years ago.
That's right.
And also there was magic in that room. And I know there is to some extent with every birth, but there was just this palpable energy of the room that she was doing this and she was conquering it. And it was really hard for her,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
As it is for anyone, no matter how you birth. But I think people wanted to witness that, some of the people on the floor, and kind of just see her strength and see her do this.
Yeah.
I remember there was like extra nurses in there that, you know, after, you know, now I've been to many more births since then that would even be in there, in another, you know, unmedicated birth nowadays.
Yes. And, you know, afterwards, I was able to take time off. I was able to take 4 weeks off and then come back. And my two things happened in the first few days that really just struck me and showed me sort of the power of what this whole experience was. One was that I came back, my first rotation back was in the NICU. So here I was with this beautiful, healthy, one-month-old baby. Mm-hmm. And I was with all these kids who were born as early as 24 weeks and all kinds of health problems. And so, goodness. You know, it struck me in a way that I probably wouldn't have felt if I didn't have my own child, my own baby. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather actually passed away just a couple of weeks after my daughter was born and never got a chance to see her. And I remember being in a NICU and a grandfather coming in to see the baby. And so there was that just really kind of keyed me on to how special it was to have this new little life in our lives. But then also sort of the idea that having a child completely changes how you practice as a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. My first day back, I was in the NICU in the morning, but it was also my clinic day. So I came upstairs and was taking care of kids in just the regular pediatric office in the hospital. And there was a 3 or 4-year-old who had a really bad eardrum and had ruptured the eardrum and was seen by a resident the day before. And this resident was a year older than me, but she didn't have any kids. And she had written in the recommendations, come back tomorrow, get checked out again. Between now and then, use nasal saline and suction 9 or 10 times a day.
Oh my gosh.
I had a kid for 1 month, and I knew there was absolutely no way that was feasible.
That's not happening.
Yeah. So, you know, not to knock any pediatrician that doesn't have kids, but oh man, once you have them, it really changes what you say and what you do.
Exactly. And that perspective too. I mean, it's huge for anybody, but I imagine especially a pediatrician, you know, it's so life changing for anybody once you become a parent.
Yeah.
But then to work with other kids when you go to work every day, that's huge.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about your grandfather and thank you for sharing that.
You know, are you still there? Uh-oh, I think I lost you again. Hello?
Steve, you there?
Hey, there we go. I'm here.
Okay, sorry.
So weird. So,
hear yeah. me say that I was sorry that I'm sorry about, thank you for sharing about your grandfather and I'm sorry for your loss there.
And actually one really sweet thing that I'll never forget was that we had taken a picture of Addie. You know, she was born around 9 o'clock at night and we spent the whole first night looking at her and taking pictures, and with this beautiful little picture of her just a few hours old asleep, and had printed it out and given it to everybody. And when my grandfather was in the hospital back home in New Jersey, my dad showed him the picture, and my grandfather apparently was not really speaking much at that time, and then the last thing he said was beautiful when he saw the picture. So really touching.
That circle of life. And that's wonderful. You know, I think you probably know, but my dad passed away when I was 7 months pregnant with my twins and never got to meet my twins. And one thing I hold on to, kind of similar to that story with your grandfather saying beautiful, is that I wasn't going to find out their gender. And for various reasons, at May 7th, I did. And my dad knew their gender, and we all knew once we did the sonograms and everything. And then he passed away May 31st. So he didn't get to meet them, you know, in the physical sense, of course. But I hold on to that little sliver that like he knew he was going to have a granddaughter and a grandson.
Yeah.
And so we hold on to those stories, right? And we tell our babies
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then with Cole, it was a whole different experience, right? You know, I feel like with the first baby, you're reading all the books and you're getting the emails that say what piece of fruit the size of
your
the
baby looks
is.
Like. Yeah. And they're a mango. They're an avocado.
Yeah. And Monica would say that, you know, the first time around, she did all those things. And then when she was pregnant with Cole, we had a toddler. And so she would forget that she was pregnant until she really felt like she was pregnant, mm-hmm. you know, in a moment mm-hmm. or at the end of the day. With Coley, he was actually, so Addie was 3 days late and he was 6 days late. And mm-hmm. and the sort of expectation is with your second kid that they come earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
we were sitting wondering where he was. And mm-hmm. Monica went into the doctors to get checked and they stripped her membranes. And she started having contractions on the way home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And really just sort of labored a bit at home for a while. It wasn't quite, you know, very intense, but we called Monica's mom, had her come over to watch Addie at night, and we just walked around the neighborhood for a bit. And then when it felt like we were at the point that we had to go to the hospital, we went, gave you a ring, and I remember mm-hmm. that they were full. So she spent most of the labor
yep.
in the waiting area. Mm-hmm. In the hallway.
She did.
And yeah. we were in the room for maybe about 10 minutes. And I think she started pushing at 6 in the morning and he came out at 6:06. And that was that.
Yeah, I remember that waiting room so vividly.
Yeah,
and just how busy the floor was, you know, that night. Was it a weekend night?
I believe so. Well, no, it would have been maybe like a Friday night because we were definitely in, yeah. the office, the doctor's office that
I think it was a Friday night because I just remember it being like, I remember being surprised that it was like so busy that evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really wasn't with you guys for a long time. I don't feel like for Cole's birth. It sounds like you did a lot of that at home, you know, with her walking and all that kind of stuff. And then I met you guys just at the hospital. And
yeah. You taught us very well.
Yeah.
You knew what to do.
Yeah, you did. You guys were pros.
Yeah.
You were pros.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. Or sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, I just actually wanted to sing your praises because I realized that I didn't. I mean, that the first time, especially with Addie, like I said, Monica had back labor and you were amazing at helping out with different positions and sort of manipulating her and massaging. And I think that it was a whole different, a much better experience with you there than it would have been without.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
Yeah. No, thank you.
It was such a journey. It was, and really, it was my honor. You know, it was, we totally connected, as we've said, and it just to go through that with you guys was just amazing. And, you know, here we are 12 years later, which is just such a special memory for me. And when you were mentioning the picture of Addie at a few hours old, I think I've told you guys this, but I have a picture of me holding Addie when she's probably an hour old or something, because it was before I left the birth. And that sits on my office desk still to this day.
So I
see Addie every single day. And I love that because, and it's of course such a memory for me. And it's just, it was the beginning of my career, you know, that I love so much. And obviously it was with one of my most favorite families. And so I hope you know that. I see Addie every day.
And, you know, actually, it meant a lot. I can actually picture that picture in my mind, too. I know exactly which one you're talking about. Yeah.
And now, 12 years later, I kind of joke. I'm like, gosh, I look so young back then.
Yeah.
All that fun stuff. Okay. Well, I love all those stories. You know, I love all the birth stuff and everything. But I do want to hear a little bit about who Dr. Steve is and about the Child Repair Guide, and you're doing such amazing work in this world that is so needed. You know, obviously every day at your pediatrician office, but also your own business and outside and in your podcast. And I just want to hear more about what you're doing there and where you're going there.
Yeah, thanks.
So I
do a handful of things. A general pediatrician, a couple days a week, 3.5 days a week, one morning a week. I work at Georgetown Hospital doing bone marrow collections. When people donate bone marrow for a transplant, I'm the guy that takes it out. And that's just, that's actually a really, I love doing that. It's a total random thing that very few people get to do.
Yeah.
And you know, there's kind of like the joke that like, oh, I'm going to save lives today. And it's kind of what we're doing.
Which is what you're doing. That's
weird
so great.
To say that out loud, but it's kind of what's happening. And really it's the donors who are just incredible, because these are people who got a cheek swab because maybe a coworker or a family friend, you know, needed a transplant, or maybe they just signed up on a college campus or something. And anywhere from months to years later, they get a phone call that says that they're a match. And then come and do this big procedure. So it's a really, really special thing I'm blessed to take part in.
That is so cool that you do that. I don't think I knew that, Steve.
Yeah, that's I don't awesome. Talk about it much. But yeah, I've done it since I finished residency. So about 13 years now. Yeah. And then, you know, the big thing that is sort of my passion project and takes a lot of my time is this child repair guide. Consists of a podcast called The Child Repair Guide with Dr. Steve Silvestro, and blog articles. When I get an opportunity, I try and do videos. And the idea essentially is to try and put a big dent in all the anxiety and the worry that we feel as parents, and to really sort of bridge the gap between vigilance, where we're all making sure that nothing is going wrong with our kids and we're doing the right thing, and worry and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think that gap is bridged with education. You know, I try not to dumb anything down. I try to explain things clearly so that parents essentially get like a mini med school, but geared towards them, so they know when they have to worry, when they don't have to worry, why something is happening as opposed to just that it's happening. You know, one of my real personal pet peeves is that I think that many of us in medicine don't explain things well enough, because we have this idea that we have this experience and training, and so we're the expert, and therefore just make the call. Whereas I think that parents, you know, I'm not teaching parents with this podcast and these articles to diagnose cancer. Teaching you how to recognize, you know, is your child's cough worrisome? Is it not? Is the pink eye, is the actual pink eye that has to be taken care of, or is it not? On down to parenting things and challenges we all face there with behavior and development and our own self-care. You know, the origin story of the podcast and the book that I'm actually hopefully going to get moving sometime soon is...
You got it. Yeah. You got it. I know you do.
One night I was on call and I had a voicemail from a mom who was in tears because her 18-month-old had a fever of 100.8. And now medically, 100.4 is a fever. You know, anything less than that, like 100.0 or 99 point something, medically doesn't count. So this was just...
And not 104.
No, exactly.
100.4.
100.4. Yeah. And okay. So this was 100.8. So it was kind of barely a fever. But the mom was in tears to the point that she had to stop and collect herself halfway through the voicemail so she could finish what she was saying. Because she was so worried. This was her toddler's first ever fever. And I think culturally we have this giant fear around fever and illness in general. Even though kids get sick, they are expected to get sick 8 to 12 times a year through elementary school. So I called her back and we talked through it, and you know, I hopefully made her a bit less worried about it, and we talked about what to look out for and whatnot. And then I went on to Facebook, and this was years ago, before things really went viral and whatnot, and I put
I am looking at that article right now, and I'm so glad you brought this up. Keep going.
Before there was the official article, I wrote this maybe 15 bullet point list of called Fever Lesson for Parents, and it was all these things of what a fever is, why it's there, what to watch for, what matters, what doesn't matter. And over 2 or 3 days, hundreds of people had shared it and liked it and commented on it. And that was the very first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. And, you know, looking back, I thought, well, gosh, I can look at this as sort of a cynical doctor and think, gosh, you know, people are just so worried about things. It's ridiculous. Or I can remember that with Addie, with my first, I had the worst combination of having some medical knowledge and being a new parent. So I diagnosed her with everything from hip dysplasia to dwarfism. Oh my God. I was like, you know, there's a little bluish tinge to her eyes. Maybe that means she was completely fine. You know, to the point that we actually took her to 3 different doctors to look at her hips. And the third one was this brilliant orthopedist, John Delahaye at Georgetown. And he looked at my wife and he said, she's totally fine, but he's not going to rest until we get an x-ray. And I looked at him and said, you are the third person who's told me that I'm nuts. So no x-ray, we're okay.
We're good. Yeah. We're good. Yeah.
But, you know, so
but that makes you so human. That's like, that's what it is. You know, you were a new parent and you were worried, and that medical knowledge you had, whether or not you, you know, feel like it was, like early on in your, you know, your medical career or not, like that made you such a humanistic like parent. And I feel like that is why that connected so much with so many people and still does today. I mean, I know I've shared that article myself and sent it to people when they're texting me about their fever and all that kind of stuff. It's just a brilliant article because, you know, as you know, you're a parent and you're worried and you need to know when you're supposed to worry and when things are okay and when to reach out for medical help.
So yeah, and that's really how everything started. Started off writing a book and decided it would be a little bit more fun to do a podcast. And I would come back to the book. And this is actually, in these next few months, I'm coming back to the book and reaching out to people. I got that moving. But it's been a wonderful journey because through the podcast and the videos, I get an opportunity in one part to share my own insights and try and help folks learn how to raise happy, healthy, confident kids. But I also get an opportunity to learn from some of the best out there. You know, I've had a really great opportunity to interview so many amazing people, experts in different fields, Amy Morin and Tom Phelan, who wrote 1-2-3 Magic, you know, Patch Adams, a whole long list of folks. And really trying to
touch Adams them. Tell us about that, because I think of you as a younger version of Patch Adams, and I know other people have before, and you know, so you studied with him, or what's that connection there?
Yeah, so when I was in college, that's when the movie came out, Patch Adams the movie. And for those who don't know, because this is now sort of an old movie because we've gotten old, it was a movie starring Robin Williams about the true story about a doctor who was also sort of a clown, you know, who tried to help people heal by truly connecting with them, mainly through humor, but through just you know, close personal ways that at the time that he was practicing was really unheard of. He was practicing in the late 70s and early 80s. And so I saw the movie. At the very end, it says, hey, this was a true story. And this guy is trying to build a hospital that would be free for all of his patients in West Virginia. So I decided to look it up and do some fundraising for the hospital. So my freshman year in college.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, here's the nutty story. I would wear a costume. I did it once a year, 4 years in a row in college. Like any good college freshman, I had a coconut bra, a grass skirt, and a lei hanging on my wall.
Of course.
Of course.
Right.
You know?
Does. Yeah.
And yeah, wore that in the main quad on campus and raised a couple hundred dollars. Sent it in with a picture and a letter. And then the next year, I made a wood barrel and stood nothing but a barrel and a hat.
Oh my gosh. I love it. That's amazing.
And then after that second year, when I sent the check and pictures in, I got a letter back from Patch, and he said that he actually lived in the area. He used to live in Arlington, Virginia. And he said, bring some friends to the address on the envelope. And if you're interested in digging deeper with all this, then come on by. So we expected that we would show up at the Gesundheit Institute office. That's the name of his organization. And we figured it was going to be some office building, and it turned out to be his house.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Yeah. 10 friends and I sat in Patch Adams' house, and we watched Monty Python. We told stories.
I love it.
And we
I
spent 4 or 5 hours there, and we ended up creating a clown troupe that would go all over, most especially at Georgetown Hospital, because that's where all of us kids were located. But we would ride a loop on the metro. We would go to Pentagon City Mall and play in the food court. anything really just to try and bring a smile to people's face.
Oh my gosh, Steve. See, you are a mini Patch Adams.
Yeah.
You were trained by him. You worked with him.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love that story.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy, really cool guy. Got a chance to actually go to Russia with him a long while back. He goes every year and works in orphanages and hospitals there. Really, really neat guy. Huge inspiration for me in really going down this whole path with medicine.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. It sounds like you kind of became a mentor too, if you're traveling with him and learning from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so awesome. I picture him with a big red nose. That's right. Am I thinking of the movie?
Yeah, and there's also the main image that is used in a lot of the marketing is a black and white picture of him with a big color red nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's so great. Yeah, but back to what you were saying before that a little bit, it's just, you know, podcasts are such a great way to be able to reach out and collaborate and talk with like amazing people. And it sounds like you've been doing that on your podcast and sharing their knowledge. And that's great.
Yeah, you know, we try and cover everything that parents would either ever worry about or just want to know about. So everything from, like I said, the straightforward medical things like fever and cough and hand, foot, and mouth disease and potty training on down to, you know, I got a chance to interview the Yankees team doctor about youth baseball injuries.
Oh, cool.
You know, all sorts of things. Amy Morin, who wrote a super viral post or article on 13 things mentally strong people don't do. And she's written a few books since then. We talked about resilience and mental strength and growth mindset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
That is so fun. I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about where you're going with the Child Repair Guide. I know you said that you're going to start a book. Do you have any other plans for, like, you know, upcoming people on your podcast or any other things that you want to share about with the listeners?
Yeah. So the book is hopefully coming out. Well, I can't say coming out. Hopefully going to be really moving forward more significantly as this year goes on. But outside of that, you know, what I've started to do is reach out to other folks who are collaborating on different platforms to get more information out. So I've been working with a friend who is a food blogger and food photographer about cooking nutritious meals for your family and designing sort of a course platform around that. You know, I've also, among the other things that I've learned about, is I have a pretty long personal mindfulness practice and had the opportunity to learn about that as a medical student. And so I offer Mindfulness for Parents online course and do a lot of talks for parent groups and schools and this fall actually even some business organizations about mindfulness for parents. Because we have to really learn how to take care of ourselves so that we can better take care of our kids. And I think that's something that we often really push aside. You know, we have this idea as parents that it's only right for us to sacrifice ourselves for our kids. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels wrong to question that out loud, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we are our children's biggest role model, right? So besides the fact that if you are constantly stressed and tired and wiped out, you're not going to be the parent you really wanted to be. You can't respond to your kids with as much wisdom and compassion and patience as you would ideally want. So there's that practical piece of it. But then the other piece is that, you know, when I do my talks, I talk about how this idea that we really need to constantly sacrifice ourselves for our kids is almost like it's built into us because of thousands of years of human race tradition, right? And when we were cave people, we lived for 30-35 years. And so your main job as a parent was to make sure the next generation survived so that the species could survive. Now we're living to 80, 90, 100, and our kids are going to live even beyond that. And so now a huge chunk of parenting really is being a model for the type of life you hope your children will lead.
Yeah.
And so when our kids see us 100% of the time not taking care of ourselves, we're not really helping our kids. We're just dooming them to the same fate. We're teaching them that that's what you should do. And so we're not giving them ultimately the life that we'd hope that they can lead. So another sort of mission of mine is to really get parents, you know, not to say I eat first and you're not going to eat until I'm done or whatever like that, but just to make a point to find some time to care for yourself. And so mindfulness is a way that I've done that and try and communicate that to parents and share it with them. Yeah.
That's so wonderful. And I've taken that mindfulness for parents course and it was so impactful for me. So everybody should go out and definitely go and check that out. I think just to piggyback on that, I think for me, what I say a lot to parents and I try to do in my own life is I call it just modeling self-care, you know, which is a lot of what you were just saying. And so, you know, I'm happy that my children see that I meditate and that I go for a run and that I'm making conscious food decisions because they are going to, just like you were saying with the cavemen, like, you know, they're going to do what we do, you know, because that's what is ingrained in them and they learn from us as role models. And so we want to combat that generational thing where it's like just, you know, self-sacrifice, because then they're going to do that for our grandbabies and beyond. You know, we have to kind of end that that stigma around taking care of ourselves. And I honestly think there is the pendulum is swinging. I don't know if you're feeling the same way, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff online about self-care and self-preservation and modeling that for our children.
Yes.
I'm sure you're a big influencer there as well, but I feel like that pendulum is kind of swinging in the right direction.
Yep.
That's like, especially lately in the last few years.
My one worry is, especially with mindfulness, is almost like it's a buzzword now, you know? And so you get, I think that there's benefit to some of the superficial aspects of all this, like just the pure fact of taking care of yourself, or with mindfulness, you know, taking some breaths, and there's a physiologic benefit to taking some breaths and slowing down. You know, not to sort of veer too far off track, but, you know, one thing that I think gets missed sometimes when there's a lot of talk about something is that the deeper, more impactful level often gets glossed over. So with mindfulness, for example, one piece in the course is talking about the importance of non-judgment, right? Which is this idea, kind of a Buddhist idea, of there is pain and there is suffering. Pain is a natural fact of life. Things hurt. We create suffering by wishing the pain wasn't there. And you can see how this applies to parenting, right? You know, babies wake up in the middle of the night and you can either just accept that that's what happens, that's what babies do, or you can wish that your kid was like your sister's kid who slept 8 hours from 2 months on. You know,
as soon as they came home from the hospital.
Yes, you know, oh, well, my kid potty trained 18 months and then was dry through the night from that day on.
Exactly.
Holy cow. You know,
we never had to buy pull-ups. It was just, it just happened.
Yeah. So, what the non-judgment piece, you know, again, not to go too crazy into this, is sort of the idea of, it's the serenity pump, right? It's accepting the things you cannot change, and not being passive in your life, right? Not saying you accept everything, because the things that I think that you can make better, you have a duty to make better. But when it comes to parenting, there are so many stresses and so many challenges, much of which we can't fix. And so when it comes to practicing something like meditation or mindfulness, when I first work with people, they say that they want to learn how to have a clear mind for 30 minutes. And I don't know why everybody picks 30 minutes, but always 30 minutes. And I say, no, I want you actually to lose your focus and lose your attention when you meditate 1,000 times. Because it's when you notice that and you don't beat yourself up over the fact that your mind wandered. It's when you notice it and you calmly and gently and kindly bring your attention back to your breath, that's where you're actually learning the non-judgment. That's where you're learning the thing that's going to truly help you ride the waves of parenthood and of life a lot better without being tipped over.
Yeah, and that non-judgment begins with you, not having the judgment with yourself internally.
That's right.
Before you know, because there is judgment in parenting as well, externally, right? As we've discussed, but And you know, I have a yoga background as well, and that's what I would do in my classes as well, is like, you know, keep coming back to the breath and telling people it's okay. You're going to have the monkey brain, especially when you're just beginning this, you know, but just start to witness those thoughts and just continue to come back to that breath.
Yeah.
And yeah,
absolutely.
It's all good. It's such good stuff. I'm so glad you're doing that work. It's really so needed. I really mean that. And I know you know that, but it's really powerful and life changing, you know, when you can really practice it and then see it have an impact in your life.
Yeah.
It really is. All right. I want to know, I'm dying to know actually, what you would say to, you know, to your friends, to Monica, to yourself, to your patients, to anyone that you hold dear, or anyone that you want to give information to, I should actually say. What would be your top few tips for new parents, or even seasoned parents, just to parents? What would you, if you had to pick a couple, because you are an expert on so many of these topics and subjects, but what do you find is the most impactful thing that if you had to choose, let's say two, what you would tell parents?
Two.
It's hard,
it's
right?
Hard.
Isn't it hard?
So I think first, just overall, the idea that you're going to do a good job. I think that we're all built to have this fear of messing mm-hmm. the kids up. You know, one really lucky thing, one reason why so many pediatricians go into pediatrics as opposed to something else, is that kids get better. Mm-hmm. You know, they bounce back, they learn, they're naturally resilient. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you are coming into this with love and with a desire to do the right thing, then you're going to. Mm-hmm. You know, the little blips along the way, you're going to make mistakes. Actually, the podcast episode and article I'm writing right now is about the importance of apologizing to your kids. You know, you're going to, and that shows your kids that you're not perfect, and so they don't have to be. You know, we all make mistakes, and you learn from your mistakes. Health-wise, I mean, the pediatrician in me will say, more often than not, the kids are okay. Mm-hmm. You know, something that you're worried about, Google will tell you is the worst possible thing, but you know, there are hopefully better resources out there that will tell you that, you know, that things are going to be okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that this too shall pass. I feel like that's a big thing, you know, especially like as a new parent, you're in so the thick of it. Like you're the person that was the impetus to your first blog post, you know, the 18 month old,
yep.
You know, she was so in the thick of it that she thought that, you know, she probably couldn't think too much, but she didn't know that this is going to pass and your baby's going to be okay.
Exactly.
Most likely.
Yeah. And obviously there are times that aren't, and they're the ones that we hear about, you know, that's what mm-hmm. you read online. And then
yeah.
Things make the news because they're unusual, because they mm-hmm. stand out, not because that's what's common.
Yeah.
You know, and the second, you know, just off the top of my head right now, it would be to have your own little family traditions for a couple of different reasons. You know, one would be that kids benefit from routine. Really, adults do too. I think a lot mm-hmm. of us adults like to think that we're spontaneous when, mm-hmm. You know, really, I think most of us have our own daily routines and things that we do in a pattern. But even just with really young kids, it can be a wonderful thing to have different things that you do. It doesn't have to be as a routine, but there are your own special sort of family activities. So, for example, if we have near our dining room table, we have a family kindness journal. And so, yeah, when somebody in the family does something really kind, whether it's for someone else in the family or somebody outside the family, it gets written down in the family kindness journal. And yeah, so that really then shows our kids how much emphasis we put on being kind to others.
And makes you value it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Makes
that.
Them feel super proud. And ideally just kind of spurs on more of that type of action.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, you know, dining room table, a jar of awesome, where any moment that was just really amazing, whether it could be something big like a trip, or it could be just the other day we all went bike riding to a lake nearby and the kids came back like, wow, that was so much fun. And so it got written down as a jar of awesome. And
at I love that.
End of the year, every year, on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, whenever we think of it, we sit and read through the last year's jar of awesome. And then just for...
Okay, I'm teary. That's so awesome. Oh, and boy. Just for your kids to grow up with that and
if
have
you
that
want
memory.
One more.
Yes, please. I want them all.
Go on the thread of tears. So this, I don't know if this was my idea or Monica's idea, but we have, since the kids were babies, they each have their own birthday book that they actually don't know exists right now. They're kept in a drawer of mine. And on their birthday each year, we write a letter. We each write one to the kid about
Stop
the past
it.
Year. And the idea is that we would then give it to them when they're, who knows what, 18 or 21 or something, whenever it won't be lost.
Right.
And, you know, just all these little things that, I don't know, that help to really kind of help you curate the life that you want for your family. You know,
and your family culture yeah. and what values
yes,
you have.
That's a great way to put it.
And all that stuff. I am totally going to have to, I love all of those ideas, but our little spin on the kindness thing is we call them ROAKs, ROAK. And so we used to have it up in our old house on the refrigerator, and we would write it down on the refrigerator. And so they're just random acts of kindness that if they would do it to, you know, someone in the family, or, you know, bring cookies that we made over to the neighbors, or just anything that they did, we would write that down. But I'm going to have to do the kindness journal, because we've actually gotten away from it because, you know, life and four
yeah.
kids and
oh,
starting
have...
businesses and all that good stuff. But
yep. We have huge
I
gaps in ours.
Yes, of course. Yeah. It's life. It's an ebb and a flow. But I just treasure those ROAKs, you know, and the kids know what that means, and they call each other out on it now. Hmm. And like you said, it spurs them to do it more often, right? And anything you focus on, you're gonna create more, right? And I just love that. But we need to have a little journal. I love that. It's so great.
Yeah, it's fun.
And the birthday book, I can't. Oh my gosh. Do you do it every year, like on the birthday?
No,
like,
we really should.
What if the birthday is really busy? Can you do it the next day?
Oh man, we've gotten months behind sometimes. Don't
okay,
tell the kids.
Right.
10 years from now.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, like you said, life kind of gets in, and we're actually late. Cole's birthday was in March, and it's June right now, and I've been saying to Monica, we really got to get his birthday book written right now.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But that also shows Cole, when he gets older, like, hey, we were, you know, out busy doing life and having fun together, and then we finally had that time to get down and share about your past year. And,
yeah.
It's all good. We're all just human, just walking through this journey, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. Well, Steve, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your work. And, you know, I've said it before, but I just really think that you are doing such profound and impactful things in this world. And I'm just so glad that you exist and that you're doing that. I really am.
Thank you. That means a ton. You know, thank you for having me on here. And I want to flip that back and say that, you know, Monica and I were really lucky to have you in our lives and through two of the biggest moments in our lives. And I'm so glad that now, both in person and virtually, so many other people get to have you in their lives, because you also are doing incredible, amazing work. And thank you.
That means so much. Thank you so much. And I really, really appreciate that. I'm trying, you know, it's just trying to get it all out into the world and help people,
yep.
really, is what we're both doing, you know?
Absolutely.
Help people. All right. Well, anybody listening, definitely check out Dr. Steve and the Child Repair Guide and his podcast, because he is obviously producing such great stuff out there that you definitely need to pay attention to. So thank you, Steve, and we will talk soon.
Yeah, this has been wonderful. Thanks so much.
Yes. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.